Welcome back to the Groups Matter Podcast Show, episode 22. This is Brian Daniel with co-host Joel Polk. Rick Howerton continues to be out with his double knee replacement. You know, Joel, I don't get the feeling that Rick had any idea how big a deal that was going to be. I was in a meeting with him, and it was kind of funny. He said, you know, I had this one knee replacement scheduled, and I just decided to go ahead and get the other one rescheduled, and I met with my doctor, and apparently this is a big deal.
Right. The difference between one knee replacement between two is probably quite a bit bigger of a deal.
So Rick will not be with us once again. He is recovering, and I told him, I left him a voicemail just yesterday, actually, and I asked if he was still on pain meds and said, you know, I kind of hope you are still.
Right.
So we've got a great show here. Appreciate Joel being with us for back-to-back weeks and filling in for Rick. Today we've got Robbie Gallaty calling in. We've got the post of the week from Chris Surratt, from Chris Surratt Consulting. And as always, Rick's List. So glad you guys tuned in and happy to be with you and with Joel here. So Joel has news, you could say. I mean, so with the theme of doubles, double knee replacement. Joel, you want to tell everybody what you've got going on?
Oh, it's an exciting time. We have a little girl. We have a little girl named Lindley, and she has just been sweet. And we've loved being parents of her. And my wife Jenna, she's pregnant. We found out that she is pregnant with twins. And so that is both exciting and scary at the same time. So I'm a twin, and so I know how much trouble that we were to my parents. And so, but I know that it's going to be such a blessing to us, and we're super excited. We also found out that they are two girls, and
yes.
So we're going to have a house full of girls. Now, Brian, tell me, what is it that I should be prepared for? Because you're a father of two girls.
I'm a father of two girls, so I'm holding at 66% of your future, right? So it's been it's awesome. I remember when we found out we were pregnant with Ashton. I remember thinking, you know, out loud to God, if there's, because we weren't expecting it. You know, we were newlyweds, and Ashton came along like 14 months after we were married. It's like, what in the world? I tell people marriage is an adjustment and children is change. But I remember talking to God and saying, God, you know, we're having a great, you know, we're having a baby. Didn't expect that. But in my heart, I know that you're a just God, and a just God would make it at least a son. So we found out we're having a girl, and I was not disappointed, but it has been the biggest blessing ever. I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love, love, love having daughters. So I appreciate you asking. But you guys, I mean, that's a pretty big impact. I can't even imagine. Tell me this. I thought twins generally skipped a generation. Is that true, or is that just a myth?
Well, it wasn't with us.
Yeah.
So my grandmother's a twin.
Quite clearly.
My grandmother's a twin, and I have two siblings, a sister, and obviously my twin brother. And my sister, which is older than me, she had twins. So she had twins. I'm a twin myself, and now I'm having twins. And so we tell my brother that he's next. And so just to get ready for that. So the inevitable.
So I guess the lesson of the day is, unless you want twins, don't marry a Polk.
Right.
It's something that we can discern out of this exchange.
Right.
So big podcast. Happy to have Robbie on. Robbie is going to talk about discipleship. He was one of the leading voices in discipleship. When I first met him, he was talking about triads, groups of three, and what I've come to define as a third space for groups. So you have, or a third place for discipleship. You have worship. You have your normal group, and then Robbie has introduced, you know, a third time commitment, which, you know, for years, to request additional time was not something that we felt real comfortable with doing. But now it looks like there's a trend going the other way. So excited to have Robbie on. Our post of the week is from Chris, and it's 5 ways to keep leaders from burnout. I think is huge, and it is a really good post. And then, as always, we've got Rick's List. And last episode, we talked about icebreakers during the Rick's List segment. And even though he's not with us, we'll continue with that segment. This week, we'll look at 7 reasons a small group should be 12 or less people. And Joel, I'm kind of interested to see your reaction to that, because he's being pretty definitive with the list this week.
That's right. Yeah, I'm excited to discuss all these different things. It's going to be fun.
And as always, everyone's favorite segment, Tweets of the Week, will be back by popular demand. So, Joel, let's get started here. You want to kick us off with Chris's post?
Yeah, Chris Surratt. He's really his ministry consultant and coach. Has been so for several years. And right now at Lifeway, he actually manages smallgroup.com. And so it's exciting to see this post. And this is a topic that we don't often talk about, talking about the burnout. A lot of times we talk about the demands and all the expectations from a leader. And so this is actually going to kind of to guard us against burnout that can happen. He gives us five ways of doing that. Really, he starts out this derived from an event that he was at in Dallas, a Chick-fil-A actually, leader that came and shared about how they've built really strong leadership culture at Chick-fil-A, and he says that one of the keys to sustained leadership is really the development of the capacity of the leader. And so, again, yeah, this is not something that we really normally talk about. And so I'm excited to talk about this with you, Brian. So
yeah, humans have humans have finite capacity, but well-built structures have the ability to have infinite capacity.
Right.
Get your arms around that. So I just say it again, humans have finite capacity, since I botched that word the first time, but well-built structures have the ability to have infinite capacity. So I think what the intent here is, you have a well-built structure that has an infinite capacity, because that's just the nature of your infrastructure. But people, that doesn't change your people. They can only handle so much.
That's right.
And so Chris wonders aloud in this post, I wonder how many of our small group systems take that back into account. When your structure is built solely on the perseverance of the leaders, it will eventually stop growing. Pretty interesting. So he's given five things that you can build into your structure that will allow your leaders to continue to grow without burnout. Anytime you're dealing with volunteerism, I think burnout is something that you have to think about. Particularly those ministries. I know in the past there's been ministries, you're probably familiar with them, that people talk about the high volunteers, high capacity, high burnout. There's just this churn that you have to always be mindful of and always replacing. So we picked this post this week because I think Chris has done a good job just helping us, giving us five things to think about so that we can be proactive in preventing burnout.
Right. And I think that it's especially true when we're talking about volunteers. I mean, because that's really what it is. We're talking about a volunteer position most of the time. And so we want to protect the people that are serving our people. The church's job is to guard the gospel and to guard gospel people. And we have to protect our people to be able to do those things. Yeah. So the first point here is to build breaks into the schedule. Brian, what does that look like in your small group? What does it look like to build breaks into the schedule for leaders?
Well, it doesn't mean taking summers off. You know, a lot of people do that, and I think summers off is a little misleading. You know, mm-hmm. People think teachers have the summers off,
That's right. It's
really 6 weeks during the summer. So. I think in group life, a lot of times that means a handful of meetings or maybe get together for socials. But when you build breaks into the schedule, for me as a group leader, I like to look out 3 to 4 months in advance and build in maybe just a social time or a time where we're not going to meet out in the future, so that everyone can see that that's a time that you can have that night back for something that you might want. I think with leaders, this might mean something different, though. I think with leaders, I think you want to have maybe a week to where everyone is getting together on a Sunday night on the property for either a night of worship or a service or a special occasion. At our church, we have a night of worship, and we'll use that time sometimes for business meeting type things. But it really is a night of worship, and we maybe tack other things on to it. And that week, the groups don't meet. And so as a leader might want to think, and then so your group leaders get that time back.
Yeah, that's good. I love the illustration he gives. He says in football, it doesn't matter how dominating the team's defense is. If they are playing every down of the game without breaks, they'll start to give up ground, right? And so Chris says that there are natural breaks every year where leaders should be encouraged to take a breath. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is done in our groups by cultivating leaders within your group and coaching up leaders within your group to take over. And he's going to talk about that in a second, so I won't say too much about that. But that's so very important.
I think the natural part of that is important. Holidays, with a lot of stuff going on, there's a natural break. There's probably a natural break right around the end of school.
Yeah,
a lot of graduation, people maybe taking off for vacations and maybe spring break. But I think those two or three, I think, are the natural breaks that Rick talks about. I don't think back to school time is one of those things. I think back to school time is actually a time that you ramp it up. But that's another season that we tend to look at.
Yeah, so another way to provide solid curriculum choices, and I think that Chris is really hinting at a little bit here, because he's the director of the smallgroups.com, and so he talks a little bit about what smallgroups.com is. But if you're expecting your leaders to build and teach their own Bible studies every week, then there's eventually going to be burnout, right? So he's talking here about to provide solid curriculum choices. What are some of those options for us, Brian?
I like this one a lot, obviously, because of the world we live in, but we do what we do because we believe in it, right? So I think we both know people that do develop their own curriculum every week, and I'm amazed by those people, and I think that's rare. I would also say that that may not always be the best case, regardless of how the acumen you think this person has, or the best thing to do. We do this for a living, and I don't write my own. And I will use a lot of what we do, mostly what we do, but not always. I mean, it depends on what's out there. We have not used a trade book in our study. We don't use, and haven't for some time, the DVD driven.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of groups do, and I think that's we've said it in a prior episode that is a way that you can recruit. The DVD-driven Bible studies tend to help us with new groups and recruit leaders.
Right, because those are really essentially based on a facilitator, not an actual teacher that's teaching, but they can easily facilitate a group discussion with some of those.
And that teacher can model how you lead a group and how you bring content, and so the leader can sit back and learn from that person. And then you can sell it by saying, do you have a home where you can host, and can you have some soft drinks or water or tea available? And that's really it. Then you just facilitate.
That's good.
I'm glad Chris put that in there, because that's something I think a lot of us don't give enough time to.
Yeah, that's good. He mentions a third way to train leaders to share the work. And he really hints at the idea of discipleship here, where that leaders are really missing the opportunity to disciple if they are doing everything for the group. This is hard for me, Brian, because it's important for me, but it's hard for me, because if I am the leader of the group, the understanding, at least in my thinking, is that I need to lead out every aspect of the group, but it's so important to delegate different work for those that are in your group. One, it allows them to be able to serve the group and to minister, but two, it allows you the freedom to be able to focus on what you need to focus on. Some of those things in our group are things like preparing meals. So it'd be very easy for me to tell my wife or tell even the whole group, hey, I need you to bring dinner this night. I need you to bring dinner this night. But we have a girl in our group that actually plans that out, so I don't even have to think about that. Same thing with helping organize. So we meet in our home, and so I have another person that helps lead out in the effort of assigning people to help watch the kids when we're having our discussion. There's other things like organizing outreach opportunities and really also leading discussion. We have that opportunity to allow someone else to come in and lead discussion too. So
do you host and lead your group?
We host and lead. That's not,
Does the location move around at all?
It does not, in our group. Now, this is actually the first time that we've hosted and led. And so our groups at our church don't really always fit that model. But sometimes it's depending on the group. I mean, if you have a small group of 12, which we'll get to here later, then then space is limited. Sometimes, you know, people are in townhomes or apartments where they can't fit 12 people in their home. And so at this season, it's beneficial for our group if we meet in our house.
I haven't spoken with very many people that don't lead and
really
lead and host, but I wonder if that model wouldn't adhere to this, to what Chris is writing about here, that because I know to prep for leading and to prep for company are, I mean, those are two different tasks.
Oh, right.
And it'd be nice to split that up, and that would be another way to share leadership. And I don't know how many, groups really consider that, but I think that's a really good thing. I think it's a really good thing to consider.
I think the idea is to engage everyone, and this is a perfect way to do that. One thing that we do in our groups is somebody comes in. This is a little scary for some, but if someone new comes into our group, a lot of times we'll try to assign them a small task. Like, hey, you want to bring dessert next week or something small, or bring drinks or something like that. And it engages them. One, it brings them back. It allows them to feel obligated to come back next time, but it allows them to be a part of the small group. So I think that that's helpful too.
Number four for small group, pastors, allow leaders to step away. And I would, let me offer something up here. Don't just allow it, build it in. You know, keep your thermometer, keep the barometer, keep your eye on your group leaders, and be ready to step in and say, hey, you know, why don't you take a couple of weeks and I've got someone else can lead it, or find someone else in your group to lead this, and let you guys just take a break.
Yeah, this is really helpful for me. We talked about in the last podcast the importance of starting new groups, and I think this is actually a way we can build in the value of having an apprentice type of leader, so that they're ready to step in and to continue to group, but also in order to plant new groups as well, so you can give them that responsibility of planting new groups. I think that that's a really good way of doing that, and it gives you the opportunity to coach them in the process. You're not just putting them into this role and you not being there, but it gives you the opportunity to build them up and to coach them up so they can go out and confidently do it on their own.
Yeah, Chris says build in the value of having an apprentice leader so they can be ready to step in and continue the group. I think the word value is key. How about number five, Joel?
Yeah, five, model a healthy balance. And so the structure is only as strong as its leader. That's what Chris is trying to get at. And so ministry is a marathon, right? It's not just a sprint. And Chris says that we are all in this for the long game, to see healthy people make disciples who make disciples. And so build in that healthy balance. This blog was really helpful for me to look at ways how, one, that leaders can get burned out, and how to develop a culture where that can't easily happen.
So that's five ways to keep leaders from burnout. This is at chrissurratt.com, and that's Chris, common spelling, S-U-R-R-A-T-T. Follow Chris on Twitter at chrissurratt. Chris is like we've already said, Chris is a ministry consultant and coach. He has more than 20 years of experience serving the local church, and he served on executive teams at Cross Point Church in Nashville, as well as Seacoast in Charleston, South Carolina. Not a bad place to do ministry.
Yeah.
He has a book out for small groups. It's called Small Groups for the Rest of Us, How to Design Your Small Group System to Reach the Fringes. And we've had Chris on the show before, and he was a really good guest. So, and this, again, Chris has really good content on his blog all the time. So that's one that you might want to bookmark. Happy to have Chris at LifewayWithSmallGroup.com.
Yeah.
All right. So getting ready to have Robbie on the phone. Go ahead and entree Robbie Gallaty. He is the pastor of Long Hollow Baptist Church and one of the leading voices in discipleship and disciple making. He also has Replicate Ministries, and you can find out more about that at replicateministries.org. Let's go ahead and get Robbie on the phone. Robbie, great to have you on the Groups Matter podcast show.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and welcome to Nashville again. Good to have you in the area. How long has it been now?
I've been at Long Hollow now for almost 5 months, believe it or not.
Well, you're still honeymooning, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but it's been a joy to be here, pastoring a great church.
All right, Robbie. So you and I have been acquainted for a few years now, and the first time that we met, I remember you talking about disciple making triads, and I don't know if you were the first person doing this or not. More than likely not, but you were the first person that I think really was elevating it as a form of ministry, or one of the first, one of the pioneers in this. So as far as I know, you were one of the first leaders to advocate what we refer to as a third space, especially set aside for disciple making and replicating. So my question is, because this is something that has picked up steam in group life, what is it that you have found about triads, which is the groups of three, that has been so effective?
Yeah, you know, people ask me that. How did you come to that realization that a group of 3, 2, 5 would be effective? And what I did is I did a cursory study years ago of the New Testament, and I wanted to see how Jesus ministered to his disciples and how Jesus raised up leaders. He actually ministered in 5 groups, if you study the New Testament. The first one is the crowd. He spoke to the crowd, but he did that on rare occasion. He rarely spoke to big crowds. You know, the feeding of the 5,000 and 4,000 would be cases of that, Sermon on the Mount. But other than that, would be hard-pressed to find anything pointing to the large gathering. Jesus' second group he ministered to would be the congregation of the disciples, would be the 70 or the 72 or the 120 in Acts. But where he spent the most time was in the groups of 12 and his small group of 3. I call the 12 the community group. Jesus invested in those 12. I think an interesting insight is Eugene Peterson many years ago said, Jesus purposely restricted 9/10 of his time to 12 Jews. So he had a small group, a life group. But out of that, he had 3 disciples that he pulled aside who were privy to intimacy and accountability that the others weren't. They had 5 encounters, Peter, James, and John, that the others missed. And so I thought, you know what, if I want to create a biblical model for disciple making, it has to involve 3 areas. And so you have the large gathering on Sunday. We always encourage our people to go smaller. So we encourage our people from the large gathering to get in a life group or a small group. But for most people, that's where it ends. They have a large gathering and a life group or a small group. But what we say is there's one more step on the train, one more stop that you're missing if you're not involved in this group of 3 to 5. And so let me just define 3 to 5. We call them D groups. They are gender exclusive groups, men with men, women with women, for the purpose of intimacy, accountability, and reproduction. And that's the key. If the groups do not reproduce, then it becomes a Bible study. And we need Bible studies. Praise God for Bible studies. But the point is replication and duplication. And so the groups are never meeting just for themselves. Actually, we say the gospel came to you because it was heading to someone else. And so the group's not finished until the mentee becomes a mentor or the player becomes a coach. And I think 3 to 5 is more effective than 1-on-1. You know, when people talk about discipleship, they think 1-on-1 discipleship. And I've realized through the years that 1-on-1 is very difficult to do. If you think about it, most men will not be excited about sitting across the table from another man, eyeball to eyeball, sharing the deep, dark secrets of their life. Guys just have a hard time doing that, right? In addition to that, a 1-on-1 group can become a counseling session where you're just talking about counseling issues. And it's great to do that, but discipleship is more than that. 1-on-1 is difficult because it's hard to keep people accountable when they're looking at you only. But you put 2 or 3 other guys in the group or 2 to 3 other women in the group, and the group will hold each other accountable. A 1-on-1 group's hard to reproduce because they look at you as Jesus, and they're like this lowly disciple. They're like, there's no way I can reproduce that. You're a pastor. You're a leader. You're a life group teacher. I can't do what you did. I think the trump card is that Jesus never ministered to anybody 1-on-1 systematically long term. And so I think the most effective group would be 3 to 5. Now, people say, well, Robbie, do you ever do 1-on-1? I do it all the time. Never in place of the group, always out of the group. So my guys are always saying after our weekly meeting, hey, can you meet with me for breakfast? Or can you stay after to talk about life? Or can you talk to me about my marriage? I do it all the time. But it's always in place. It's always out of, never in place of. And I think the final aspect is this. It's a multiplication strategy versus an addition strategy. And so that's why we always opt for groups of 3 to 5.
All right, a couple of follow-up questions. One, how often do D groups meet? And I'm interested. It seems to me that there is a trend for a long time. There was a trend away from asking for additional commitments. I think that was a natural. Seems like that was a natural culmination from the church growth movement that became more of a numbers game. That's doing an incredible disservice there. But it seems like what you're advocating is somewhat the antithesis of that. So how have you gone about that additional ask, and what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, I tell you what's interesting is I was having a breakfast with a pastor years ago, And I was encouraging him to start investing in guys personally and to be intentional about disciple making in his church. He had a rather large church in the same city I was pastoring in. And he said, Robbie, we're always doing discipleship. It's just organic. You know, we just let it happen within the church, and we don't want to be too over the top and intentional about it. I said, that's interesting. You know what? Jesus never did that. Jesus never left discipleship to chance. He never left our spiritual growth to just happen. And we're kidding ourselves if we think we're going to grow without intentionality. And so what we do is we say, yes, there is a high accountability, but I think Jesus modeled that with his disciples. Jesus would always send them out, and then he would hold them accountable when they would get back. And so I think if we want to see spiritual growth happen in the life of our people, we have to hold them to a high level of accountability. And what's amazing is when you do that, people are dying for that. People are dying to grow closer to the Lord. And I think you would agree with me. Most born-again believers, if not all, want to be closer to Jesus. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, they want an intimate relationship with Christ, right?
Right.
I mean, they want to know more about God. They want to hear his voice. Here's the problem. They don't know what to do. And when people in the church don't know what to do, they don't do anything. And so many people in our churches are suffering from either ignorance of what to do or analysis paralysis. They have too many things to do in the church, and then they don't know what to do on the flip side. And so what we've developed is this discipleship pathway. So like I said, we say, hey, listen, a faithful member of Long Hollow is involved in three different groups. You can do a lot of other things, but that's in addition to these three areas of growth. The first one is the worship gathering. The second one is the life group gathering. And the third one is the D group gathering. And we say you can do anything else you want, but we want you to at least do that. And you know as well as I do, when you're involved in those three, you really don't have a lot of time for a lot of other things. And so, yeah, do we have a high accountability? Yes. But I think people are dying for that today. They really want that.
And it seems like that's a trend that we're seeing.
Yeah, so Robbie, I've heard you talk about that several times, and that's a perfect lead in to a question I have for you about the importance of investing and being intentional with the lives of people. I've heard you use 2 Timothy 2, 1 through 2, and would you mind talking with us about how a small group leader or a church educator can create that type of culture when they're in their groups? I mean, especially from you, you're coming into a church that has an established way that they do discipleship in small groups, and how you can go in and create a culture that has that type of investing and being intentional in the lives of people.
Yeah. Here's an adage that I've kind of lived by and I've taught to our staff is you can't expect from others what you don't inspect. So it's a twofold process of accountability with what people are doing. So we can't expect what we don't inspect. If we want our people to make disciples, we have to hold them accountable to be intentional about making disciples. But here's another adage I think is more applicable. You can't expect what you don't emulate. So if we're not emulating disciple making in our life groups, in our churches, in our staff environments, then it's probably not going to happen. You see, discipleship has to be the ministry of your church. It can't be a ministry in the church. If it's a ministry in the church, then it's just going to become another 40 days of seminar or a gathering. It has to be the heartbeat of everything you do. And so it's this attitude of raising up leaders within. One of the things about the former church I've pastored is the leadership pipeline we had was disciple making. So 17 staff members over the course of 7 years, some part-time, most full-time, 17 staff members we raised up from the inside. Some of them are overseas. Some of them are serving in foreign countries. Some of them are planting churches. But the pipeline for leadership, I would even say the pipeline for volunteerism. Now, I know your listeners have no problem with volunteers. They have volunteers coming out their ears. They have so many volunteers, they don't need any more volunteers, right? That's a joke. We all need volunteers, right? So the way to raise up a generation of people who I think take ownership for their faith, take responsibility for their faith, is through disciple making. And like I said, you've got to model that. and then you have to inspect that. And if you don't inspect it, you can't expect it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, sorry, I missed a joke there. That's mic drop. That was a mic drop moment because, yeah, that's right. All the volunteers coming out the ears, that's right. Especially in kids ministry, right? Especially there.
Exactly.
Way, I mean, way so too many people. Way too many people. All right. For those small groups, all right. So, for those on the issue of intentionality, for those small group pastors and ministers of education that want to become more intentional about discipleship and replicating disciples, what are some early steps that they can take to become more intentional and effective in making disciples just based on your own journey?
Yeah, I think first of all, they need to find and identify a group of 3 to 5 men, if they're men, women, if they're women, out of their life group, small group that they can invest their life in. I would suggest meeting for 12 to 18 months, normally 12, and you meet together once a week. People say, where do you meet at? There's nowhere to meet. There are 50,000 coffee shops that offer free real estate for anybody who enters, and you don't even have to buy coffee. They'll let you even meet there without even buying a latte. And so we have this free real estate that we can use. So on Wednesday nights at Long Hollow, it's become one of our biggest days for discipleship. Why? Because we already have age-graded programming available to our parents. I mean, think about it. You have children, children's programming. You have student programming. And most of the adults are either plugged in a men's study or a women's study. And so we have all these classrooms open where people can gather together in discipling relationships and meet weekly. And so we've utilized Wednesday nights. Now, that's not the best place to meet. Most of our groups are actually meeting off campus. They'll meet at a Panera Bread or a Starbucks, and they meet for anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half with the purpose of reproduction. And one of the things I've learned years ago is that you're never learning for yourself. And you guys know, when you're in a group and you're the recipient of information, it's one thing. But when you're in a group and you know you have to reciprocate the information, that's a whole different ballgame. Why? Because you study different, because you know you're going to have to teach it. Years ago, I was radically saved from a life of drugs and addiction. If anybody knows my testimony, the Lord radically saved me from a drug addiction. I got in a bad car accident on November 12, 2002. But for the next 8 months, I wandered. I didn't know how to read the Bible, didn't know how to pray, didn't know how to memorize scripture. And one Sunday morning in August 2003, a man by the name of David Platt walks across church and he says, hey, would you want to meet once a week to be in the word together, to pray, to memorize scripture? I said, David, I'd love to. He said, pray about it. I said, I already have. When do we meet? And for the next 2 years, David met with me intentionally, first one-on-one, and then we opened it up to a group of about 5 or 6. And he taught me something the first or second week we met. There's a principle I never forgot. And he said, Robbie, you should never come to this group without a notebook. You should never listen to a sermon without a notebook. Why? Because you're not learning for you. He said, the moment you step out of this room, you're going to forget 80% of what we said unless you write it down. And he said, how are you going to teach the next generation of people behind you if you don't write it down? And so I've never forgotten that. And so I just want to challenge your listeners. It's important as we are discipling others. We're never learning for ourselves. We're always learning for people behind us, and not even just the people behind us, for our children, right? The greatest discipling relationships we have are the first church of our homes, right? I mean, it's our kids and our wives and our husbands and our families that we're investing in. And let it not be said of us that we walk past the nursery in order to walk to the Starbucks to disciple people, the nursery of our own kids.
That's great. What a great mentor in David Platt. Hey, Robbie, you recently helped us with a study that I'll plug here. Called Basics, the foundations of a healthy church, understanding those foundations of a healthy church. And you helped us in that video series with the topic of the Great Commission. And in that series, you mentioned that years ago you felt God telling you to focus on the depth of your disciples and that he would take care of the breadth of your ministry. Can you help us work through that idea and what that may look like in the context of a small group?
Yeah, you know, sadly, and in so many contexts, the the success rate of any group is how many people you can get to come in, or how big is your church, or how big is the attendance. And so we're so focused on that at the expense of growing people deep and really investing in people. And so what the Lord really impressed upon me is, Robbie, what if you stop creating this revolving door of ministry where you invite your friends to the church or the small group so that we can get them to invite their friends to come next week, so that we can overlook them to invite their friends the next week so they can overlook. And you know what I realized was that they were leaving out the back door as fast as they were coming in the front door. And so the Lord really impressed upon me, what if you began to worry about the depth of your people and you trust me for the breadth of your ministry? If God's the one who gives, you know, Paul said he planted, Apollos watered, God gave the increase. So if it's God who gives the increase, then we are commissioned to worry about and to help people along in this depth growth of themselves, or this growth of themselves. And so I really began to see, what if we began to invest in people? And here's what happened. When we started focusing on growing people deep, you would be amazed that the giving started to increase. You'd be blown away because the attendance started to increase. People began to raise a holy hand in worship. People began to show up. People began to go to the mission field. And it wasn't because I was begging them to go or forcing them to give. It's because they wanted to. Here's why. The greatest gift we have, or the greatest focus, I think, of the church to get people involved is to get people in love with Jesus. See, when a person loves Jesus, they're going to give more. They're going to go more. They're going to serve more. They're going to be on mission for God. And so what happened was, as I began to grow people deep, or focus on growing people deep through this pathway, then the process and the output of that was that they went to go on mission for the Lord. It was amazing. It was an amazing picture of the gospel.
So the Great Commission and group life right there. You can learn more about Robbie at replicate.org. And a couple of books that we recommend, Rediscovering Discipleship and Growing Up. Robbie, you want to tell us the difference between those two?
Yeah, Rediscovering Discipleship just came out last year. It's more of a philosophy of discipleship. I go back and look at the ways of discipleship through the year that really have been overlooked. I looked at discipleship in Augustine, Richard Baxter, Jonathan Edwards, John Wesley. And then I give a process for making disciples in the local church and in group life as well. Really kind of a philosophical, theological book. Then Growing Up would be more of a practical book. There's so many books out there on discipleship that talk about why we need to make disciples, but so many people, I feel, are left asking the question, how do I make disciples? And so Growing Up is just something we use in all of our groups. Whenever a group starts, they go through the book Growing Up, read a chapter a week, and talk about it weekly.
And Discipleship Blueprint, an event this fall that you guys are launching. You and I talked about this. It's been in the last year, and you told me that this was coming. And in November, it's going to happen at Long Hollow Church in Hendersonville, just outside of Nashville. And you can find out more about that at discipleshipblueprint.com. But Robbie, if you had, you know, if you had 30 seconds to tell someone about Discipleship Blueprint, what would that look like?
Yeah, basically, for years, pastors would call and say, hey, can we come sit in and look and see what's happening in the area of discipleship at your church? And it got difficult to have people sit in on staff meetings. It wasn't very helpful. So we thought, what if we have them in for 2 days? We pop the hood, we pull back the curtain and say, this is how we get people off the bench and in the game. And that's basically what it is. It's just our process. We give away everything that we've learned through the years, all the dumb tax we paid. We tell you all the ways we've learned and give you to go back to your church and implement it.
So website replicate.org. Couple of books, Rediscovering Discipleship and Growing Up, and check out Discipleship Blueprint at discipleshipblueprint.com. And you can follow Robbie on Twitter. He is great, and that's at RGALLATY. Robbie, thanks for being with us. Let's do it again. What do you say?
Hey, man, I enjoyed it. Appreciate you guys.
You guys have a great night, and we'll be praying for you, okay? Appreciate you being with us. That was Robbie Gallaty, and does he ever have a voice for podcasts?
Goodness, right.
You worked with him. I mean, his dimension, he's, you know, for those guys who don't know Robbie, he's like 6'6". He was a Division I basketball player. He's, I think he's played around with MMA. He's somewhat authoritative in presentation. But that was particularly strong. A couple of resonators for me. Jesus never left discipleship to chance. That's another way of it. You know, we all know about intentionality with ministry. You got to know where you're going and have a path for getting there. To couch it within how Jesus did it, but particularly that Jesus did not leave discipleship to chance. I don't think anyone really needs that warning necessarily, but there's something, there are notes of alarm in that statement that make me say, am I leaving anything to chance?
Right.
That calls introspection. But I thought that interview as a guest, I thought Robbie was just fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I loved how he talked about how the church leader, the groups leader, the church educator needs to emulate those things. I think one of the tweets last week was, or the last podcast was, talking about how he was, one of his tweets was he was an actual group leader and excited about that night. So I really appreciated him. I thought it was really helpful.
And, you know, and the fact that one-on-one becomes more counseling, a natural follow-up there when he does one-on-one, I wonder if he calls it counseling. Maybe we'll ask him that next time. But that Jesus spent most of his time in groups of 12 and 3, not something that we haven't heard before.
Sure.
Was a good reminder. But I like the, you know, the large gathering, small group. The 3 to 5, I agree. I think that is a really good place to be in that group of 3 to 5 that are gender-specific, particularly in today's world.
Yeah, and I don't think this has to be an accountability club or accountability group, right?
Yeah.
It has to be intentionally, it has to be gospel focused. It has to you're speaking to one another and speaking truth to one another. And so you're showing each other where you're not believing the gospel and where you are believing the gospel. But it's not this, let's share all of our secrets. And so we're pushing each other to truth as we're
curriculum doing choice.
Yeah.
That was in our post of the week, what Chris Surratt said. Curriculum right. choice is one of the ways that needs to be resourced well. Robbie Gallaty at replicate.org, R-Gallaty, G-A-L-L-A-T-Y. Those books that he mentioned are, again, Rediscovering Discipleship and Growing Up. And I would encourage you to look at Discipleship Blueprint as an event. That might be something that you guys want to check out. That's at discipleshipblueprint.com. Now we're ready for everyone's favorite segment, Tweets of the Week. Joel, you want to get us started?
Yeah. First of all, I love this guy's name, Rocky Wright. I love that name.
I wonder what sport he plays.
This is his tweet. It says, pastors, we have the responsibility to teach biblical community, encourage a culture of meaningful church membership and true worship. Love that. I'm thankful for that tweet from Rocky Wright, at W Rocky Wright with a W.
Biblical community,
encouraging a culture.
What was the membership? So it's
of meaningful community. Church membership.
Meaningful church membership. Membership is something that I think is getting I've seen a resurgence in how serious membership is being taken.
That's right.
Which I like.
Yeah, sure.
I think we made it too easy sometimes to be a member in the past, and so to have some skin in the game is a move in the right direction.
That's good.
My post of the week is from Rod Dempsey. This is at Rod Dempsey. Church, ? A community of Christ followers under biblical authority who are committed to loving God, one another, and their neighbor. There you go right there. That's Rod Dempsey, Tweet of the Week. Can't get more crystal clear on the place of community in church life than that, I don't think.
Love Rod. He helped us out with the product, didn't he?
He sure did. Disciples Path. We've talked about it on the show. Yeah, he'd be a good guest down there.
Yeah, he would. We need to do that. I've got one more. I've got a tweet from J.M. Scrimp. Says this, biblical community is not a group of perfect people, but a group of redeemed people, #community. So that's really good. The fact that we're not a perfect group of people coming together, but the reminder that we are a group of redeemed people. Man, I say it all the time. I grew up thinking that I called it my resume mentality. I went in presenting the best self that I had and which was obviously not anything outside of Christ. And so I had that in my biggest weaknesses was I had no weaknesses. And so I presented that, in front of my Sunday school class as I go into church. And so that's so mistaken. I'm glad that we can acknowledge the fact that we're not a group of perfect people, but because of Christ, we are a group of redeemed people.
That's one of those head-heart paradigms, because I think we all know that. But to actually strip down and live that is a different scenario altogether. So to say to bring in my, you know, my authentic self is quite a bit different from doing it.
Right.
It reminds me of the psalm that talks about God knows your innermost. God knows who we are. And that's a lot of times revealed by our behavior, not by what we say, but what we do. And as we know, what we do maybe when people aren't looking. Last tweet of the week, this is from Ariane at Little S-U-N-G-W-A-N. I have no idea what that means. But anyway, Ariane says, I started going to this small group thing in our church, and they're the nicest people ever. So I'm so happy.
That's
which
great.
Which is really cool. That's the way group, we talked about that earlier, about assimilation. So group was a way that Ariane was assimilated, and she tweeted about it.
That's great.
So that's Tweets of the Week for episode 22. All right, we're going to move on to Rick's List, and this is the segment of the show where we look at Rick Howerton. I don't know how he continues to come up with these lists, but we have made it its own segment, and Rick can't be with us this episode. Appreciate Joel being here, of course, but every segment we highlight or feature one of Rick's List, and this week it's 7 reasons a small group should be 12 or less people.
Ooh, this is a little controversial, right?
Yeah, yeah. Are you on board or are you not on board?
I think I am. I don't know if I'm set on the number 12, but
it's biblical.
Right, it is biblical.
Can't dispute that.
But man, I sure have seen the truth of some of this list in my own group, in my own experience leading small groups. Rick says that the number of people in a small group really does affect the group members' experience. While it may be true that the group leader can promote the same principles and practices as groups with 13 and 30 and 50, there are at least 7 different, which he gives us, reasons why this ideology may be incomplete. So what do you think about some of these?
Well, let's just look at the list. I'm in favor of the or less part of this, to be honest with you. And certainly in my experience would be no more than 12. And then you've got attendance and people, you know, how often do you have 100% people there? So I think some of that must be taken into account. First reason why it should be 12 or less, according to Rick Howerton, for Rick's List this week, is only a group of 12 or less will experience close, intimate relationships between most or all of its members. This is a group dynamic fact, not an opinion.
Yeah.
Which probably suggests this is rooted in some study that he's done.
Right. Like number 2, when a small group is more than 12, fewer and fewer people are bold enough to engage in the conversational Bible study. You know, I've had a conversation with someone recently that told me this. So I'm an extrovert. I like more people. I have more energy when there's more people and more discussion. But not everybody is like that. And I think that you have to take into account those that aren't as extroverted as some of the group leaders may be. It emboldens people when there are fewer people that are there. It allows them to become more vulnerable, allow them to speak up in the class, and we have to keep that into account.
I think that can also work the other way, but I'm still in favor of 12 or less. All right, number 3, when a group is more than 12, people begin to feel that they are unnecessary to the group and are more apt to miss meetings. Probably true about the missed meetings, definitely true about the unnecessary part. I think just in a bigger group, it's just easier to say, yeah, they got it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Number 4, when a group is more than 12, there isn't enough time for group members to share their thoughts and perceptions during the conversational Bible study. Yeah, that's also got to be true. I think that we have to take that into account also, that we want, this is a time where we're sharing our lives together. And is there enough time to share our lives together when there's 30 to 50 people in the group? And I would contend that there's not enough time.
Yeah, and this is different from the second one in that this is literally there's not enough time.
Right.
The second one is I may not want to share. All right, next up, when a group is more than 12, in most instances, a few people ambush the conversational Bible study each week.
Yeah.
I think that can happen in any number, but obviously just by the law of averages, the more people you have there, the better the chance of the hijacker.
Number 6 is similar to some of the things we've already talked about. When a group is more than 12, group members are less apt to step outside their comfort zone and pray aloud for the first time, read scripture, share their spiritual journey. And it is in stepping outside their comfort zones in faith that God grows us. Yeah, that's got to be true too. I think that as a community group leader, I try to allow people to pray and provide things and organize childcare or organize the meals or whatever that may be. And when there's more people, there's less opportunity for you to be able to contribute to the group.
So what Rick is saying here is not only am I less apt to talk in a group of 12, but I'm also, in addition to that, less apt to contribute in a meaningful way.
That's right.
And, you know, and be more transparent. Last one on the list, when a group is more than 12, people are capable of hiding in the crowd and ultimately will get lost in it.
Yeah.
I think, 12 may or may not be the threshold, but definitely the more people you add, the greater the risk of that, which, you know, is why you multiply. I think multiplication, and we've talked about this on the show before, that needs to be a culture, because what you want is healthy groups. Healthy groups grow. Healthy groups growing develop bonds. Healthy groups growing that develop bonds are less likely to want to multiply. And so you have to build in that expectation. Robbie was, he hinted at it. You have to build in that expectation and make it a matter of culture on the front end, that this is our end game. We're going to multiply this group. And so, you grow the number, you've got to know when to multiply it.
Yeah.
Without losing people.
That's good. Yeah. Once again, Rick's list. Rick is not with us today, but, by giving this list, he is now with us. So that was good. Thankful for Rick's list. That's some helpful steps here.
Rick's making an appearance, and he is at Rick Howerton on Twitter, and his blog is rickhowerton.wordpress.com. Good content there. And he is a profuse writer. He posts quite a bit, and it's always really good. And, you know, different from a lot of bloggers, Rick's easy to read. The way he breaks it up and his titling is really good. So check that out. Follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, Brian, I would love to hear what people think about that number. Is that a magic number? I think that'd be to hear back from people and how they've done it in their own groups.
What do you think?
I mean, I think it's close enough. I think 12 is a good number. I think that in our group, we have people helping with children. I think that we have people that are missing some weeks. And so that 12 is not going to be a magic number because some people are not going to be there. And so, but I think that that's awfully close to the right number. So
I like 8.
Yeah. 8's good. 8's good too.
And, as a median adult getting older, I don't know how to put that. I'm not going to go too high on that, but we don't have children that we're dealing with, but we do have busy schedules in my group. So 12 members, usually about 8's who's going to show up.
Yeah.
6 to 10.
That's
good.
6
to 10 is the range. So that's why 12 works for us. Well, Joel, it's been great. Thanks for being with us on this episode of Groups Matter. That's going to wrap it up for this show.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me again. This was fun. This was a lot of fun.
And again, we are sponsored by smallgroup.com. You can check that out, of course, at smallgroup.com. And if you are in need of either a quick study or a sermon-based study, this technology that's available through smallgroup.com at a very affordable cost is perfect for you. So we would encourage you to check that out. I have used it and continue to use it every now and then, not all the time. And I can create a Bible study in seconds. You use a drop down, you choose your scripture text, you push create, and it is there. And it's in a format where you can go through and edit and customize it for your group. So,
yeah, now they're using some of our own studies in that about smallgroup.com as well, taking some of the Beth Moore, Matt Chandler, Tony Evans studies. So that's a really good website.
Yeah, they're video driven, and those tend to be topical. So you've got a topical video-driven options along with the text-driven options. That is correct. And Chris Surratt's actually, you know, like we mentioned earlier, he was the post of the week, and he actually works very closely with the smallgroup.com.
Right.
Thanks for being with us. Look forward to being with you next time. And I'd like to thank our producer, as always, Mr. Drew Porter. We'll be right back.